Welcome back, folks, to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. This is a revolutionary one coming straight at you from the circadian Canadian. That's right, folks. Guess what? I was once a doubter, and now I'm a believer. Well, I don't know if I'm a believer, but I'm not a full-blown skeptic anymore about whether or not this industry can actually create positive outcomes for humans using electric light. Is that a good summary, Greg?
It's a good summary because now we have something that's somewhat definable. We'll see if it actually comes through and gets finalized. But yeah, good summary.
Adam Lillian from the Underwriter Laboratories has been researching lighting and the various studies out there. And he's come up with some interesting information for all you listeners. So check out this one. But for right now, we got to tell you about Kurtzon.com. Go to KURTZON.com, baby. That's Kurtzon.com. Specification grade leaders in lighting, Greg.
That's absolutely there. You can check it on their website, all of their products. They have tunable white fixtures. They have unique applications. And they're going to be at Light Fair this year, where we're both going to be. They are at Light Fair booth number 2758. So make sure to check them out because they're not the same company that you see over and over down the aisles when you walk. Kurtzon's different. It's worth checking their booth, 2758.
American made, baby. Right out of Chicago, I think, right? Straight out of Chicago, Kurtzon.
Absolutely.
So go to KURT.
Straight out of Chicago.
Straight out of Chicago. Go to KURTZON.com, baby. That's Kurtzon.com. They are specification grade American made light fixtures, LEDs, right here in North America, because I'm in Canada. And of course, don't forget about the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org, where we interviewed and met Adam Lillian. That's right. That's the first time I've heard someone come forward with proof. That's right. You're going to hear it first on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. You know what? Let's cut right to it right now because this is one of my favorite discussions ever. Coming at you, the circadian Canadian.
Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Adam Lillian.
Thank you, Michael.
Say hi to Greg Eric.
Hey, Greg.
Hi, Adam. Thanks
Glad
for being
to be here. Thanks.
So just a little bit of housekeeping before we get into how can I call your presentation? Nothing but groundbreaking, actually. That's the
oh, thank you.
The one of the most audacious presentations I've heard thus far in the health effects of lighting. And I'm sure the listeners are very interested in it. But we have some housekeeping. You go first, Greg.
A couple lighting dork things, and I need to ask you all since we're on. If you run into a fixture, and this happens a lot of time in the LED industry, where you buy a fixture that's 120, 277 volt, mm-hmm. Now you're in the field and you find out it's 480 volt. Is it UL listed to change for a field or a contractor to change the driver in the field to 480 volt?
To up the voltage?
I don't know. Okay. My understanding is no. Okay. But it's certainly what is on the listing itself. And the listing is very specific to the voltages. So somebody out there might have a field selectable product that was tested and rated and certified mm-hmm. to operate multiple voltages, but that would be clear in the certification itself. If somebody has a certification for one set of parameters and then wants to modify it in the field, it's not typically UL listed for that. It's, mm-hmm. it's very specific.
Okay, and then how about if you do a step down transformer?
That I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had. There's been some questions in the industry on that, so I don't know anybody has a clear answer. But
my peers would know specifically. They're okay. Very highly qualified electrical engineers. My background is more on the business side as a business development manager. My job is to know where the lighting industry is going, and to ensure that UL.
So you're the
is
one
there.
That knows. Because no one else.
Finally, well, finally, we found
someone. You know where it's going.
I'm committed to finding out and to know before we get there. But somewhere between the advancements that are happening as we shift away from illumination to horticultural lighting, which is fuel mm-hmm. for plants, and circadian rhythm, which is health for human beings in lighting, and Li-Fi, which is going to be the way we stream exactly mm-hmm. that in the future. And the challenge is to understand all the parameters that are in the industry that are seen and unseen, they're going to affect adoption. And that's what I specialize in.
So, the naked ape.
Is that Marshall McLuhan or?
No, I would give probably Marshall McLuhan. Yeah, he's the smartest Canadian of all time.
I love
just
it.
So you know, Marshall.
Where are you, second or third?
I'm up there with them, those guys. Yeah, me, Jordan Peterson, and Marshall McLuhan. That's us. That's Canada for you.
Top three.
So the Naked Eight. I always love it when it's when the truth is so obvious.
Yeah.
Okay. So the idea of circadian entrainment or light entrainment is very obvious. It's an obvious, it's one of those things that's self-evident almost. Of course, the earth revolves around the sun. Of course, the animals are in tune with this process. How could it be any other way? Like it's so self-evident, it's almost ridiculous. And the idea, I read a book on human hibernation.
Mm-hmm.
That human, like hibernation, people think hibernation, they go, people, the animal goes to sleep for 4 months and just burns all its fat. That's not, hibernation means different sleeping patterns in the winter. That's what hibernation is. So animals says, so humans actually hibernate as well, particularly humans from northern climates will actually sleep a lot more in the winter and will their systems will slow down. And all of this stuff is triggered by sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so we know all this, like it's self-evident, but it's also now there's like, you know, science, well, looking at the paper, it says it on the paper here. Now we know it, right? Now for sure we know.
It's funny you mentioned hibernation. My dad, when he was alive, was a physician, a researcher, a surgeon. And one of the things that he researched was the brown fat that is around the adrenal gland in the kidney. And he led a research project to try to figure out if it was a gland in itself. And so for years, he studied brown fat layer buildup in humans. And I grew up with that as an environment at home.
So what's your brown fat like, son? Let me see that brown fat.
He kept on trying to convince us that if we ran around all winter in Syracuse, New York, in T-shirts, we'd acclimate.
Wow.
We let him try.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So spending some time outdoors in nature every day.
Yeah.
Oh, big surprise. It's good for you.
Yeah.
Another self-evident thing that people have known for
now that's self-evident. The arrival of understanding the effect of our circadian system has been a long time in development. In the 1700s, the first biologists started studying plant synthesis and started to mark the effect of the sun's revolving. The Earth's rotation around its axis. You mentioned sure. earlier the sun revolving around the Earth. It's actually the rotation of the Earth is a 24-hour cycle.
Sure.
Seasonal has a different effect on our rhythms, but the effect that this has and coming to the place today in 2019 where we're challenged to figure out this conflict between energy as the prime driver of our decisions and reducing energy to remove ourselves from fossil fuels so that we can stop paying the bank to borrow money to pay for the fossil fuels coming over sure. from overseas is all shifting too, because we're in a country that's now becoming one of the prime exporters
sure.
of natural gas
energy. Canada doesn't like that, by the way. But so
I was wondering when you guys were going to build a wall.
Yeah, the walls.
And get your southern neighbors to pay for it.
You know what? I'll tell you this. Canada and the United States have one thing in common. Both their leaders are deep narcissists.
That's excellent.
How's that? Okay.
That's a camaraderie.
Yeah. Right? So one's on the left, the other's on the right. They're both deep narcissists.
I love it.
All right? So all this stuff we know anecdotally as humans that going for a walk in the sunshine makes you feel better.
Yeah.
Walking in the forest makes you feel better. They've known this from a lot of different reasons. What makes you think you can bring that indoors?
You can't. However, we're in northern climates that are inhospitable to us in the winter. We're in southern climates that are inhospitable to us in the summer. So we've created air conditioning and heaters mm-hmm. So that we can expand where we live. And because of that, we're trapped indoors. We can't bring indoors. We can't bring the outdoors in so much in an already built space. There were periods of time when we did quite well by designing spaces that the architect and their client attempted to bring enough indoor lighting in. There was a whole period in the Industrial Revolution early on where large factories had 60-foot ceilings and huge windows, and that worked just fine for the workers. Sure. It's as we learned how to build shorter spaces so we wouldn't have to heat and ventilate them to the same degree. And then we decided in the past 20 years that we could go from 1.2 watts per square foot to 0.6 watts per square foot.
Yeah, it was all about energy efficiency, and the industry's taking a second look here.
The industry needs to take a second look. I think that a recommended practice published by UL and commented on by the whole world, and I'm hoping to receive a lot of comments from all countries and all experts and people who are lay people as well. But until we have a serious dialogue and come to a form of a conclusion on a baseline for where we start, we're not really considering it all that much. We're arguing about this, about the fuzziness of the science.
Okay, so here's what I took from your presentation, just to sum it up for the listeners, because there's going to be 5,000 and 10,000, you know, lighting dorks that are going to listen to this. Okay?
Gotta love it.
And they're going to like say, I'm going to go sell circadian lighting or I'm not after listening to this one, okay? So I always suspicious of horizontal foot candles, the measurement of the vertical, of the horizontal surface as the guide to light levels.
Right.
I always suspicious of that. You don't drive your forklift. We don't walk around like this. You spend most of your life looking around at walls.
Right.
A lot of stuff came out about seasonal affective disorder, and you'd have these old 10,000 lux things that people would shine in their eyes and stuff like this. What I've taken from your talk today was that you need to get those vertical foot candles into your eyes, and they need to be at 300 lux.
250, 300 lux, and then the recommended practice gets very specific about the difference between those two, but roughly speaking, yes.
And you're sure that you're not going to cause any harm to anybody doing this?
Well, the challenge is going to be taken up by lighting designers, and one of the things that lighting designers have to take into consideration are things like glare and discomfort. They also have to take into account that in age of the eyeball, an older person has a greater specular filtering system, and so glare is much more an annoyance to them. Someone with a young eye, so each designer has to become familiar with the practices, and they have to also test and measure after the space is built to make sure that they've delivered what they set out to do.
One of the concerns I have is, so I think there's always these funny lies that I was told when I was a kid. One of them was that the world's running out of oil.
Right.
Told that my whole life. Now we have, 10,000 years supply in North America alone or whatever it is, right? One of the great lies. The other things that I was always told my whole life that's becoming a lie too, and sort of being revealed in the show, is that the sun is bad for you. So wear sunscreen, wear sunglasses. So, you know, make sure whenever you go outside, you put on your sunglasses, so that you can't have those awful UV rays go into your eye. And it's actually coming around that, yeah, maybe you want that in your eyes, particularly if you're not spending 8 hours straight at the beach. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it is actually good for you to receive that direct sunlight into your eyes. Which is it?
Well, you mentioned the lie of
peak oil,
of fossil fuels.
Yeah.
And if you consider at the time what was being considered as a requirement, one of the requirements was to be able to withdraw it at a cost and a price that was reasonable.
Okay.
So before fracking,
sure.
Without that technology, it was not possible to do it at a certain price point. After fracking, without thinking too much about it, perhaps it wasn't very affordable when you consider the impact that we've had on the environment and on people. It's helped tremendously.
Yeah.
As a revenue generator, and it might be a transition phase going from fossil fuels to something that's more renewable.
Yeah.
So when we look at outdoor lights, it has at least as many nuances as something as simple as accessing fossil fuel and putting high pressure steam into shale rock. Going outdoors, you're increasing the degeneration of your cell structure, and as we try to rebuild our cell structure, cancer can form. Early on in my career, I did cancer research with multiple myeloma patients, which is a bone marrow cancer, and that's to our knowledge, not affected by sunlight, but the generation of components of the eye based on UV is very real. We're studying it as well at UL in something as simple as coatings for LED diodes, conformal
so
coatings.
So how do you know that, you know, 250 lux, a lot of light to be shining in someone's eyes, or 300 lux, that's a lot of light.
How would you define a lot of light in that case to being out on the beach?
But you're going to be entering the interior environment. So people go to the beach and people rarely spend eight straight hours in the sun without hats and covering up or whatever. Right. Very rarely do people do this. Sometimes they'll go and they'll have their bathing suit on and they spend 6 hours at the beach, five times a year, maybe. I mean, the max, a Canadian, maybe 10, 20, something like that, but it's definitely not every day. Right. But people are going to be in work environments now where, I guess, subjected would be an interesting word to use. They're going to be subjected to this circadian rhythm experiment.
It's not an experiment. The experiments have been happening for decades now.
Okay.
And in the recommended practice, I believe there's over 60 referenced publications from around the world.
And I saw that 62, you said.
And a number of different, I'm sure that's what it is. Those research pieces were done under very tight scrutiny by some of the world's best researchers, under grants from very concerned parties.
Sure.
And so the experimenting that you refer to isn't delivering 250 lux to the vertical surface of the retina.
Okay.
And the designer with the recommended practice will be empowered to figure out how to do that in a way.
What was the outcome that the positive outcome that these 62 studies kind of all agree upon? What is it that they get from, what is it that people get from this?
Well, they certainly don't all agree. But if one takes a step back and considers a baseline, and the baseline meaning, where do we start? We're not really shooting all that high. We're saying, how do we deliver healthier indoor spaces in when we've been underlighting and affecting things like depression, diabetes, certainly seasonal affectiveness disorder, and coming from Syracuse, I think I should be an expert in that.
Sure.
But the result is intended to be better entrainment, higher alertness, and better sleep. And when we mess that up and we disrupt sleep patterns, and we don't allow the immune system to do its job and the cells to repair themselves at night as we've evolved for
these
them
are
to
some
do.
Monster claims, Adam.
No, it's all in the research. And the fun part is I was where you were when I first learned of this potential recommended practice being published. I had a lot of loud comments. In fact, my comments were so loud I was invited to join the task force, mm-hmm. And so I've learned my lesson. Having joined the task force and challenged the members of the task force and the researchers on the task force, and having read the research reports and having a background in cancer research from early on.
So these are double-blind, replicatable research papers that have been peer-reviewed by other scientists.
You're referring to a medical practice.
Okay.
And so the double-blind and...
Or whatever you call PhD, the stuff they do. They've measured it. They said, this is our results. You can now replicate it if you'd like to.
Well, in fact, at this early stage, it's not totally typical that an exact study would be replicated directly, right, because there's too much new research to do.
Sure.
In medical, you have to do that numerous times.
Sure.
But in something like circadian effective design, yes, the dozens and dozens of medical research paper findings support each other.
And what do they support each other on?
One simple thing is that we're providing too little light during the day,
yeah,
and we're providing too much light at night. We're negatively affecting people's health.
Sure.
And by negatively affecting their health in a way that's easily remedied, lighting, as opposed to a lot of the other things we're dealing with, when we talk about pharmaceuticals,
sure,
in our drinking water, mm-hmm, that's a little bit more complex, and you don't know where to start.
Sure.
But if you can bring in 250 lux into the retina in the morning hours, and reduce your lux levels to less than 100 lux in the evening, and you can positively affect people's health and well-being, we as an industry have an obligation to understand if we think that's accurate. If we do think it's accurate, we have a responsibility to act, but not before.
So you're saying that you know it's accurate?
I'm saying that I know that the recommended practice will do no harm, and that the results that are achieved when somebody hits a circadian stimulus design of 0.3 in a work environment, that both self-reported and medically tested results are positive and provide the results that are promised.
That's a social media clip right there, buddy.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. I have to ask a little on UL. So I always understood UL as a certification body. You put a stamp on it, it's UL listed.
We do that as well.
Okay, so how many recommended practices do you guys do? Is it your number? The one we're talking about is UL RP 24480.
Right.
So does that mean you've done 24,000 some?
No, in fact, it'd be good to understand that the part of UL that's publishing the recommended practice is the same part of UL that is relied upon to publish a standard. Now, that doesn't mean developing the standard. So we have two sides of Underwriter Laboratories, or UL. The Underwriter Laboratories part is the not-for-profit side, and they have the publishing arm. And the for-profit side is doing the certification and testing. It's the not-for-profit side that is running the task force, and they're using their intellectual property of using standard consensus proprietary approaches to gaining input from all over the world. So as a recommended practice, it's actually the task force that includes the task force. The people on the task force are very well published, but it has a host of scientists and researchers. It includes two of the researchers from the Lighting Research Center, Mark Ray and Mariana Figuera. But it also references documents from all over the world and research that has been published. And to your point, Michael, is it double blind and verifiable? While it doesn't work that way, the components.
You know what I mean when I ask that.
Yeah. The components of the recommended practice are validated by all the research. Mm. So there's not research sound research that conflicts. To my knowledge, there's not a single piece of solid research that conflicts with the recommended practice. Now I can't say that because I haven't read every research piece out there. But what the recommended practice relies upon is a baseline of understanding that's accepted, and we've even opened up the early part of the publication process was working with a lobbying group for electrical manufacturers in North America. And they read the report and got to weigh in and had some very constructive points of view. And those constructive points of view were put into the document and helped make the document even better. Now, that's not the world of experts, but we did test the recommended practice and threw it out to key players that were selected by the lobbying group.
How many lighting recommended practices has you all done?
I believe this will be our first.
Yeah, this is an audacious one, buddy.
So this is number one. Yeah, is this not?
This is the number. I mean, who did you piss off?
Oh, in anything like this, whenever something advances this far, this fast, there's gonna be a lot of.
I mean, typically lighting
a lot of frustrated people.
Practices are IES, at least in the lighting industry.
And if I'm not mistaken, they've published over 170 of them, including recommended practice for hospital illumination, for tunnels, for you keep on going, for parking lots. And actually, IES is working on their own version of a recommended practice for circadian.
So why did UL feel they needed to step up and do it?
Well, I'll rephrase the question. When is too early to stop practices that are hurting people?
I don't know if that's the right way to describe it. I mean, that's a matter of opinion. I'm like, I liked your first do no harm approach. We have a podcast on Flickr called First Do No Harm. And, I felt like we brought back the Flickr issue. The 5,000 K at night, I think, is a disaster in the street lighting. I don't know if you agree with that.
Do you mean the AMA report that tied?
Yeah, but I mean, just even like anecdotally driving down the street, there's glare bombs everywhere of 5,000 K light. I mean, I don't need an AMA report.
A well designed luminaire placed properly at the right height with the right distribution at 5,000 Kelvin should be no problem.
And
for
dark sky
night.
Friendly and that too as well.
That like should be no problem for human beings. It's when we don't understand all the parameters of what we're doing, then we put, to your point, glare bombs.
Yeah.
But you can have a 2,700 Kelvin glare bomb.
I guess so. Except that I have so many questions I want to ask you. Okay. But the first one I'm going to ask you is, what is the difference between glare and circadian effective lighting?
Well, everything's different about them. Where they're somewhat tied together is when you move away from horizontal foot candles on a work surface. Mm-hmm. And you're looking to deliver vertical foot candles to the retina, mm-hmm. you're naturally introducing the potential for glare.
Okay.
And while glare is perhaps better studied outdoors than it is indoors, mm-hmm. we need to get really good, really fast at understanding it indoors. And one of the ways of doing that is asking human beings, because you can photometrically measure glare,
until you're blue in the face, but
you can define it. But until you have your user base in a space, operating in a space where somebody says that's really annoying to me, and if you ask them enough questions, you'll probably get to glare pretty quickly.
You know what's funny is that I think my favorite way to light an office is with 100% indirect fixture on a ceiling.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's going to need more watts per square foot.
It does.
Period. End of the story. Slap that in at like a 33,000 K, maybe some dimmable controls. Baby, that's a nice lighting system.
When I was surprised with the recommended practice that an indirect fixture scored much higher in delivering circadian stimulus.
Is that right?
And when I kept on studying the pictures, I kept on studying the energy projections of the light in the space. And it finally occurred to me that we do so much to avoid glare. The space we're in right now has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like 24 cell parabolics on a 2x4.
This is state of the art 95, I'd say.
Exactly. And geez, if we dusted those off, they'd be even shinier. Mm-hmm. But we've done all that to avoid having to look directly at a lamp, because we made some assessment at some point that horizontal is what we're aiming for, and vertical we want to eliminate.
Yeah, there's an argument that parabolic lenses cause the seasonal affective disorder outbreak.
That's interesting. I never heard that.
Yeah, I can't remember where I read that. But so parabolics came out in the mid 90s, right? Like strong, the little tiny paracubes that shoot everything straight down.
Yep.
Like these ones are a little bit better. But the original ones, you'd say, oh yeah, swap out those lenses and put in those parabolics, man. Yeah. I was balling on that for about 10 years. Rip it out, acrylic lenses, and put it in parabolic loops.
Yeah.
Shot all the light straight down. All of a sudden you look at the office, there's no vertical foot candles in the office.
And you're in a cave because there's no light on illumination
and
on the walls.
People sold millions of those saying it's healthier for you. Look at your computer screen. Da, 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 da. And so I'm always very wary about the snake oil, Adam. I got this circadian effective lighting here in my pocket.
Well, let me actually turn this to a positive point that'll help your listeners, because 98 point something, I'm making it up, of the light, the illumination in indoor spaces that we're going to be dealing with over the next 50 years is already built. The window and the fenestration has pretty much been set, and it's really expensive to go and punch a new hole and to put in new windows. So we're talking, to a large degree, retrofitting into circadian.
That's the name of the show, but there you go.
And with our overhead lighting and the fact that we happen to have a forehead and we happen to have, you know, eyebrows.
Mine happens to be pretty big too, so is yours.
I'm working on it, aren't I? Yeah, a little makeup.
That keeps going.
So we've worked so hard to make our overhead lighting almost totally inefficient at a vertical delivery of lux to.
There was a guy that was going after best product. I'm not going to say the name of the company, but the whole thing was that there was no vertical foot candles.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I thought, I don't like that.
Yeah. And so when we're retrofitting, if we take a look at the expensive lighting that we've already bet on, It's our overhead recessed troffers and some downlights.
There's more of those than Americans.
And but not more than Canadians.
There's more troffers than there is Americans, I think.
I believe that's, yeah. that would make sense. Yeah. So we're not going to rip out the guts of the troffer and put in a retrofit kit that tries to deliver more vertical lumens. Okay. Without a lot of consideration of cost, and return on investment is always a big consideration here, as I outlined.
Well, you
in my
made
talk.
Some productivity claims, okay?
Once you get into
those health effects and productivity claims, the ROIs become extremely attractive. Actually,
it depends on who you're talking to, but let me make this case: if retrofitting into circadian is going to be expensive, difficult, and if a better alternative exists before we do that, then perhaps one of the answers is wall washers and desk lamps. So it needn't be a huge expense. It needn't be a total retrofitting of a space.
I don't like to hear that.
But if I hear you, because as you know, in the lighting industry,
we've heard that before.
It, layers of light. It goes back to that. Sure, if I drop a 30 lux table lamp right in front of me. And I can solve the 250 lux without too much trouble. Mm. If I want to do it elegantly and I have layers of light and I reevaluate the reflectivity of my walls, the reflectivity of my ceiling, especially if I'm using indirect, and even the reflectivity of the floor. But let's not forget, you've got furniture.
Sure.
You've got surfaces. Mm. I walk through airports, and airports have a knack these days for putting highly reflective modeled surfaces that we couldn't produce even 10 years ago.
Sure.
Either made of steel or looked like sculpted sand drift, white plastics and stuff like that. When I look at those, I'm fascinated. And I think, I think of those as the backdrop to our cubicle that we farm in today. And I think of the fabric that we put on the back of those cubicles behind our computers, and they're, you know, remember the rust colored orange,
yeah, sure,
and the dark grays,
sure, yeah.
And we put a thumbtack in, a push pin into it, and we hang up our post-it notes on it, and we put pictures of our family on it.
Yeah.
Well, what if that was considered the luminaire? What if that reflective surface? Oh, it's not reflective today. Good, let's replace them all. Let's sculpt surfaces, and let's hang a light above our steel case. Cubicle. Let's hang it right off of it, a little pendant light. And let's have it pointing not towards the eyeball, but let's have it wall wash the space behind our computers. And let's put a motion sensor on that device. And let's know when I'm sitting in there, in front of there, for 2 hours, or if I want to tune it up a little bit, and I test this out with a dacimeter, which is a device that I wear that can tell how much lux I'm delivering to my retina.
Dacimeter?
Yes, a dacimeter is one of the common devices, I think every lighting designer will end up owning one soon.
You heard it here on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, folks. Get yourself a dacimeter.
This goes back to what we were saying. Everybody needs their own individualized light to go everywhere with them.
That's right.
That's basically what we're doing.
Well,
put
actually,
a light over each person.
I'll take that a step further. Yeah. Get a picnic table.
Yeah.
Yeah. We shouldn't be having this podcast inside a hotel room. We should be outside.
Let's go right now. Yesterday, we hadn't been out of this hotel for 2 days. So Greg's like, let's go outside. We went outside. It was like, boom. Beautiful day in Reno. The air was fresh in that. And yeah, there's something to it for sure.
Mike, I'm glad you brought up somewhat politically sensitive big issues like fossil fuels and big claims and things like that. I think that part of the confusion in the industry is we have a high disposition to look for controversy and take a side and vote on it.
That's American tribalism.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? It goes back to how you crazy people watch students play sports. Who cares about students playing sports?
Oh, right? That's right. You're from Canada. I couldn't understand why you were wondering about that.
Yeah. Who watches students play sports? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You guys get all, I'm Ohio State. I vote Republican. Oh, is this a vote Democrat? I'm a proud American. And then you guys are so big on being on the team and supporting
your team.
Have
you
guys,
team. Have you guys heard that we all get trophies for participating now?
Oh, that's, yeah. Well, let's not go down that road. That's okay. Real gross.
That's where it starts to get gross. I tried to tell my son, look, you lost 7-3. The other team won, and they won because they scored more goals than you did.
Yep.
The goal is for you to, the reason you're out there is because you want to score more than the other team. But anyway, let's get back to Greg. You got a bunch on your list. My mind is still blown on this a little bit. I'm not sure I can accept any of this, Adam. Let me just kettle it for a bit. Go ahead.
Yeah, Greg. No, I guess I'm going back to the recommended practice and just how that relates to the industry. And so you said IES is working on one too. Is it going to be competing recommended practices? Because to me, then that's not a recommended practice at all. If the IES has one and the UL has one and they contradict
each other. DLC comes out with one.
And DLC says it.
Well, DLC is not working on one.
Okay.
That's the good news. CIE has formulated a position. Mm-hmm. We use the term loosely well standard, but it's not really a standard. It's a recommended practice in my mind. So you already have two potentially out there. The one that's under public review right now by UL is not published. And there's a small possibility that it won't be published. Mm-hmm. That has not been determined yet. It a lot depends on the public comment. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned, it's already been through a series of that. Yeah. So I hear you. When I think of something that's much more rigorous than a lighting recommended practice for a tunnel or a hospital.
This is a person,
not a facility
any longer.
And when I think of medical,
you're not talking about lighting up the space. You're talking about lighting up the naked ape. Yeah. Light that bastard up. He's gonna feel better. Woo!
I think one of the challenges that we're dealing with here is that we're so hard on lighting. I've got an ergonomic chair. Mm-hmm. I've got a stand up, sit down desk that makes me healthier.
I got a treadmill desk too. I just got it.
And what evidence did I ever demand? To vote on before I decided to have an ergonomic chair, something that supports my lumbar. But lighting, because you know it's a very deep and esoteric and scientific and artful field, we all love to argue about things. So
that's because I don't really think we know what light is yet. I don't think we really know. I interviewed
go a little further on that.
Dr. Veach, right? Mm-hmm. And we were talking with her and. We basically, she said, look, you know, anthropologists, biologists, physicists, you know, all sorts of different scientific disciplines are all moving into figuring out what light is, how it affected our evolution, all mm-hmm. sort of stuff. And I made the comment, I said, this is like the fish figuring they're out there in the water.
Yeah.
What is light? All the energy you have from fossil fuels comes from light.
Exactly.
It's all light energy.
Yeah.
Right? You know, we don't even know how it works, yeah. really. We are creatures of the light, in a sense.
When you say we don't know how it works,
How it works. How do you know how life works?
Light and life are...
Yeah, like
how you do change you... Like, you change a couple letters.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is that everything comes from a nuclear fission reaction, a nuclear bomb that's going off for the next 2 billion years.
We did just discover the first visual depiction of a black hole.
Yeah, there you go. So now we're spinning around the sun at 14,000 kilometers an hour.
Right.
Right? The sun is spinning around the Milky Way galaxy at 114,000 kilometers an hour, something ridiculous like that. And we're getting smashed. We're sucked in this light suction from the sun as we whip around the universe. What the hell do we know about how it works?
Do we care how it works as long as it doesn't stop and we get thrown off?
But yes, well, there you go. I mean, but yeah, all that sort of stuff. Sure. I mean, are we going to keep going? We can get into all these existential questions. But the reality is, it's like, for me, there's to say that we know that this is going to help people. I just have a hard time with it. I just have a feeling that there's going to be something that's going to come out that's going to say, actually, we shouldn't have done that.
Do you, Michael, do you suck on a root when you have a headache?
That's you. Are you trying? No, of course not. Well, take Advil liquid gels.
Well, aspirin is a root.
Okay.
And
I don't rub mold on cuts either. Moldy bread either. I take antibiotics when I have a bacterial infection. Yes, we do learn things. You're right. But did we know that there's going to be all these problems with superbugs when we started using antibiotics? You know, there's unintended consequences to everything.
Well, what's the unintended consequence of poor indoor lighting for over 100 years?
That's a good point. I mean, Dr. Venkat said that, you know, that poor indoor lighting is, in fact, the greatest productivity invention ever.
How so?
There's nothing that increases productivity more than
adding light to night.
Being able to see.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Being able to see at night is the greatest light, artificial, or, sorry.
Electric
light. And is the greatest productivity invention ever and the greatest security invention ever.
There's a book, I forget the author's name, but it's called How We Got to Now.
Okay.
And it talks about the evolution of lighting and how it's changed our civilization today. It's really fascinating. It covers about six different areas, but the one you just mentioned is very well written about in that book.
There's another one called Disenchanting the Night. Mm. It's a book by, it's translated from German. I read it in university many years ago. And that book stayed with me. It's like, talks about how the creation of artificial light is really deeply fundamental to every other productivity gain we've had.
It's why I took some risk in my presentation this morning to this
Just
group.
Just a little bit of risk you took this
morning. And I thought I was holding back. But bringing up the concept of how we came to discover light, how many millions of years ago, and how it's affected our being, much less our society, and who we say we are today, the concept of lighting the night, the concept of cooling the north, the concept of warming the north, cooling the south, and our expansion on this planet is a phenomenon that I don't think we take nearly as much credence in as we should. It's something we miss all the time, and so to come to a group of manufacturers and distributors today in a hotel ballroom with, you got to see the patterns on these rugs.
It's pretty wild, folks.
Someone actually got paid to do this, but to bring up the concept of where light came from and when we discovered it and what we've done with it today. And it's only been in the last blip of a second. For 100 years that we've lit indoor spaces the way we are, to discover this early on, hey, we haven't been doing such a great job. We might need to course correct, and maybe energy is not the penultimate final place we need to get to. One of the things that coming and doing this talk furthered my own thinking, which surprised me a bit, was the last point that I made in the talk, which is that today we focus on energy and we do a great job of it, and I believe the Department of Energy federally created the systems benefits charge, and then we mandated the utilities to collect these taxes from the ratepayer for gas and electric. And we make sure that if you pay for a gas tax, that it comes back in the form of gas. And if it's residential or commercial, we're really careful about all that. And so we've gotten to a place today where we're driving towards 0.5 to 0.3 watts per square foot. Well, what if the equivalent for where we need to get to is the National Institutes of Health creating a tax on some part of our medical system, whether it's diabetes drugs, depression drugs, exact things that we know that light can improve. And what if that became a systems benefits charge that was then managed and given as rebates to folks who do circadian effective design
inside buildings? Whoever comes up with that rebate is going to get chewed up and spit out by me. I'm going to be selling tons of circadian.
Yeah, not spit out, but you're going to be using
it. Oh, baby.
Start over.
Yeah. Well, hang on. So hang on a second. Let's drop back here. There's something I wanted to say. I just so had it in my head, but then you hit onto the rebates again, and I just get going crazy. What was it? You were saying about your talk. Oh, man. Greg, help me here, buddy.
National Institutes of Health.
Yes. Yeah. There was something I wanted to say about it. I lost it. Darn it.
It was actually the best thing you were thinking so far.
It was.
I can see it. I feel like.
Yes, because the light is touching us.
That's right.
You know, we're swimming in this. You know
that's
that,
right.
Right? I'm moving the light right now.
Yes.
So.
I guess one question, and maybe you can think about it, but this recommended practice, and if it becomes an accepted practice, it's going to drastically change our industry. Do you think it has the potential to do that, where we're going to go into every facility and say,
well,
now you do this?
I'm afraid we won't.
Yeah.
Because it's not how we tend to do things. I think of the penetration of LED lighting in indoor spaces. I've asked probably half a dozen people in this last 24 hours if they think that the Department of Energy's projection of a 12% penetration of indoor LED lighting is accurate. And I had one person here say they think it's about twice that.
I think it's more than twice that.
And
in
so
Canada, in Ontario, it is anyway. I think so.
And then in the meantime, we're sitting under plenty of 32 watt fluorescent tubes.
Yeah.
And
oh, I know what I was going to say.
Oh, good. Go for it.
Here.
This is going to be brilliant.
No, I think it is. I'm so sick of energy savings, dude.
Yeah.
I want to be able to use in my life as much energy as I want. And screw you, you make it clean. That's what I'd say.
Yeah.
Go make some clean energy.
Yeah.
Get off my case. Because you know what? Energy is almost like a human right, dude. Like it's borderline. Electricity, access to electricity is getting damn near close to being a human right. Okay? And, you know, it's like, I want to be able to use as much electricity and energy as I want. And I don't want anyone to tell me not to. Oh, you may feel guilty. So guilty, whatever. No, buddy. Like being able access to energy is one of the most wonderful things a human can have. So let's give as much as we can of it. So you can make circadian friendly systems. You can build wonderful devices in factories and all sorts of stuff. I think like the lighting industry has done everything it can to reduce its energy consumption. And no industry can even come close to what we've been able to accomplish. Okay. Where is it coming from the generation side? They need to make clean energy and they need to make it a priority like the moon. We're going to go to the moon. Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a badass thing. What are you talking about? Going to go to the moon, eh, buddy? Yeah, we kidnapped this Nazi guy named Werner von Braun, and he's going to take us to the moon.
Just curious. I hope you're as passionate about water rights for people and a reasonable amount of health care.
You know,
but being Canadian,
okay, I mean, so you want to know the difference between Canada and the United States? I'll sum it up for you in like one line.
Okay?
Canadians have the right to health care,
mm-hmm.
and Americans have the right to bear arms.
That's a good way of putting it.
Those are the fundamental differences.
Yeah.
Now, Canadians have the privilege of owning firearms if they wish. And it's very discouraging, you're very heavily discouraged from owning firearms that are designed to kill the human animal only.
Mm-hmm.
But, in the U.S., healthcare is a privilege.
Yeah.
But anyone can own a gun.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So those are the differences between the United States and Canada. Fundamentally, that's it. But I'm not done yet. No, I'm not. That's the symbol for being done.
Wait, that was the brilliant point, right?
No, the energy. We need
clean energy. Gotcha. Okay.
No. The conversation about reduction is over now. The conversation needs to switch to the producers of energy and bring us clean energy. Enough's enough. That's where it's got to go. But color temperature.
Right.
Amateur podcast host here. I believe there's something to low Kelvin temperature at night that comes from our evolution and our relationship to fire. And I think there's something there that needs to be studied. There's something about dimming lights and dim warm, like that warm dim. You know what I'm talking about?
Take it away from fire, which has only been around for a couple million years. Go back a bit further in the whole evolutionary plane. And when the sun is on the horizon and there's particulate matter in the air, that's why it's golden yellow.
Yeah.
In the morning and in the evening in many cases. And studies, early work with LED lighting and poultry shows that...
That's a whole other topic too, yeah.
Shows that using golden-hued lighting, warm CCT, in the evening is much more productive for the chicken farmer.
Mark Jewell came on and said that using the correct kind of lighting for pork farming also.
Yep, that same group that did the early poultry work, they've increased egg laying by 8%.
Milk production too.
And then it went into the pork industry, and now they're in the dairy industry as well. And dairy cattle, they call them the girls, that are able to walk over to the self-milking machines, do so three times a day, to release the pressure in their udders, whereas farmers have done for hundreds of years two times a day. So often, if we just let the system figure itself out, it does much better than we do.
Sure. So color temperature, there's something to warm color temperatures then for sure.
When you say there's something to it, there's absolutely something. There's something. Yeah. I mean, it's how our
what is our relationship to that? Why is it that what is it do to us? Why is it that we like
warm Kelvin temperature.
You mean lighting. Beyond a pina colada and dancing under the stars?
Yeah, like, hey, yeah. I mean, sometimes that girl looks a lot nicer when the warm color you get on your outside in a 5,000 K. Whoa! You look so much better on that dim to warm.
Well, if you, I don't know, but if you consider what we probably used to do evolutionarily, we'd leave the cave in the morning and we'd be hungry and we'd have a full days of activity to either fend and find berries and fruit or sure. go and kill something.
Yeah.
And that's pretty high anxiety, at least running after animals and trying to kill something. And as the day winds down and the evening sun comes on and we start to relax and we get ready for sleep, I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty good to me to associate the warm yellow hue with relaxation and pre-sleep. And what we know today is in our circadian cycle, when we wake up, we have about 12 hours of alertness. Our biological system starts to shift. And within 4 hours, we have a lot of physiological glandular changes. Within 4 hours, we're looking for a place to put our head on a pillow. And if we're in good sleep health, one might say that within 15 minutes, we're sound asleep of putting our head on a pillow, and we wake up when the sun comes up. I dare say that's not how most people see their lives today.
That's how my life works, actually, though.
That must be a Canadian thing.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. It's just a Michael Colligan thing. Like, as soon as I lay down at night, boom, I go to sleep, and then I'm waking up in the morning and ready to rock, kicking cats, buddy.
I have to admit when my head hits the pillow, I'm usually asleep before it hits it. Okay. However, I'm not certain that.
That's because you drank seven beers, though.
I actually don't drink, but that's a whole other thing.
Mark, Adam. I was going to call you Mark. Adam Lulian. Jesus, my mind is blown by these health effects, Greg.
Yeah. Still something to be determined. It's always interesting to hear the different ideas and to see a recommended practice. I like seeing that.
You know,
now
what?
We got to dive into it.
In 6 months, you could be talking about circadian effect. What is that? You had a good name for it. Circadian
training.
No, it was a circadian effective lighting design criteria. Yeah. Could be coming out hot in the next 6 months.
We're hoping to receive as many requests to be commenters on the pre-publication of this recommended practice. And
how do
people,
you do that?
People can send me an email to adam.lillian or adam.lillien@ul.com.
We'll post that on the. We'll post a link to push that, so it's not out there. But
I'm
have access.
I'm hoping to have people from all over the world weigh in,
sure.
Because the more input we can get, the better the end product will be. The product is not finished as it is. It can constantly be improved, and should it become a published recommended practice, it needs to have a worldwide audience to really change what we need to change.
We'll start it right here on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
There we go.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Greg.
Kurtzon.com. Go to KURTZON.com, baby. That's Kurtzon.com. Check them out at Light Fair. What booth are they, Greg?
2158.
Whoa, say that again. You gotta pay your internet bill. What booth number was that?
Chopping out?
It's chopping out.
272758.
2758. You know what? They're where they need to be, and they're a great American manufacturer. They're older, almost as old as Canada, Kurtzon. So you go to Kurtzon.com. That's KURTZON.com, baby, for that specification grade. The leaders with the best warranty put right on their website, the 5/10. They never messed around with all that 10-year hocus-pocus mumbo-jumbo stuff. Kurtzon.com. That's KURTZON.com, baby. And, of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, who will also have a booth at Light Fair. Go down there, check them out. I'm not sure where it's going to be. It's where all the good booths are. We'll be there. I'm going to find it when I get there. And we're going to be recording from that booth, some podcasts right out of the Nail booth. So go there, check us out, nail.org, join us. And that is also where we met and interviewed Adam Lillian. So remember, Nail's the leaders. This organization's really going to grow, Greg.
Yeah, bright future. We got a lot coming up. Had a lot of great discussions at the convention. And a lot more future.
You know, I'm bringing back the tagline, light made easy. You know, the circadian Canadian here is wondering how all this is going to play out. If the science really does come forward, like the Adam Lillian from UL says, Greg, it's going to be an interesting couple who the next 10 years just got a heck of a lot more interesting, if it's true.
Another ride to take, huh? Let's go.
Take the ride. Listen to the show. Join Nailed. You got it, folks. We're always grateful to all of you out there, our listeners, our YouTube viewers, our commenters, our guests, and our sponsors. Greg and I are super humbled by you guys. So thanks for listening. Thanks for checking us out. And don't forget, I have my own show. It's called the Get a Grip on Life Show. Oh, yeah, baby. Are you into that? You into my opinions? Well, check me out. GetAGripOnLife.com. That's right, is my personal website. And you know what? Every now and then, the Minnesotan comes out and hosts one of those shows with me. I think there's two. I think you did two with me so far, right?
Co-host. I sneak in there every now and then. Yeah, too.
So thanks for listening, guys.
See if you can find me.
See if you can find him. He says the odd thing every now and then. GetAGripOnLife.com. And, of course, this is Get a Grip on Lighting. Thanks for listening, guys. All the best. Boom!
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, Lord is there to find you.